Hi, everybody, and welcome to our Carrubbers Sunday gathering. Let me just say, even though I know it's really good that we can still meet together like this, personally, I'm really, really missing seeing everybody in person. I just had an opportunity to see a few people this past week in the flesh, and it was really, really good. I felt like it was a little bit of a taste of heaven. I'm sure we're all missing just seeing everybody and meeting together, but hang in there. I'm sure the time is coming. Let's try to make the most of what we do have. So if you're meeting in small groups, or you can begin to take advantage a bit with phase two and everything that's opened up in phase two, and our buzzword that's hospitality, and really begin to see some people, whether it's neighbors, friends, or people from the church, that would just be really, really good to do. So let's do the best that we can. I know it's still really hard. I'm missing you. I'm missing just a big hug. I'm missing a handshake. And I'm really looking forward to the day when we can get back to that again. In the meantime, we're in Nehemiah chapter 5 today. So grab a Bible. And my title for this morning is Something's Rotten. And I need to warn you, I guess, with a title like that, I need to warn you right up front to get ready this morning, because this is probably not going to be an easy message. I don't think it's going to be an easy passage for us to go through. I'm sorry about that, but that's where we are, and we have to take it as God gives it to us. And let's just really pray, whether we're visiting this morning or this is our regular place to come for God's word, let's just really pray that God speaks to our hearts this morning. I think he has something to say to all of us. I've certainly benefited hugely just from preparing this, and I hope that we all do as we spend some time together now. So Something's Rotten. If you're a Shakespeare fan, or maybe even if you're not a Shakespeare fan, you've probably heard the line from Hamlet, "Something's rotten in the state of Denmark." Well, this morning, something is seriously rotten, but it's not in Denmark, it's in Jerusalem. And it's not pretty, and it's not funny, but it is really sad. Pick it up with me here in verse 1 of Nehemiah chapter 5. After two really, really encouraging chapters of building and serving and guarding and working together to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. The writer says, "Now the men and their wives raised a great outcry against their fellow Jews." And let me just stop there just for a minute, because that should shock us, shouldn't it? It should really shock us. After everything that we've just read in these last two chapters, that has just been so good. Rebuilding the walls and everything that's come together just now for this purpose and this time for these people. It's been so encouraging. And so after that, surely this is meant to make us sit up and take note. And here's the outcry, verse 2. "Some were saying, 'We and our sons and our daughters are numerous, and in order for us to eat and stay alive, we must get grain.' Others were saying, 'We're mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our homes to get grain during the famine.' Still others were saying, 'We've had to borrow money to pay the king's tax on our fields and vineyards. And even though we're of the same flesh and blood as our fellow Jews, and though our children are as good as theirs, yet we have to subject our sons and daughters to slavery. In fact, some of our daughters have already been enslaved, but we're powerless because our fields and our vineyards belong to others." My goodness, I hope you understand that this is not the way that it's supposed to be in Israel, is it? This is not the way it's supposed to be. Because these people, of all the people in the world, were covenanted by God to be his people. And as God's special people, these people were to live radically different lives from the nations around them, weren't they? That was to be especially evident in the way that they treated each other. The nations, God's intention with these people was for the nations to look at these guys and to think, who on earth is their God, right? Who are these people? Who are these people? Why do they live the way they do? Why do they behave the way they do? Why do they act? Why do they treat each other the way? Who are these people? My goodness, I've never seen anything like it before in my life. They're so loving. They're so kind. They're so generous. They're so together. That's what God's intention was for the nation of Israel. That's what God's, they were to be the picture of new humanity covenanted under God. And people were supposed to look at them and think about God. So this is really bad stuff here. And so in verse 6, Nehemiah says, "When I heard their outcry and these charges, I was very angry." Literally, I was mighty big burning, is what Nehemiah says. That's the way the Hebrew puts it. "And so I pondered the outcry of these people and the charges they were bringing in my mind." Literally, Nehemiah says, "I consulted with myself." Isn't that good? I consulted with myself. I had a wee chat with myself. Probably to make sure that he had all of his ducks in a row before he did what he did next, because then he bites their heads off. Watch this. "The nobles and the officials," who seem to be the guys who are behind the worst of it here. He says, I told them, "You're charging your own people interest." This is shocking. It's shocking. This is one of the things, charging interest to their own countrymen was one of the things that God had told them in the covenant not to do, Deuteronomy chapter 23, because they were called to be a totally distinct people. And so Nehemiah says, "I called together a large meeting to deal with them. And I said, as far as possible, we've brought back our fellow Jews who were sold to the Gentiles. Now you're selling your own people only for them to be sold back to us? Are you crazy? Are you crazy?" Listen, Nehemiah is saying, don't you realize who you've been set apart to be? As a people for God's own possession and as a light to an unbelieving world, do you not understand who you are? Nehemiah says. Verse 10, "I and my brothers and my men are also lending people money and grain, but we're not charging interest. So give back to them immediately their fields, vineyards, olive groves, and houses, and also the interest you're charging them. 1% of the money, grain, new wine, and olive oil." Listen, Nehemiah's given it to him, isn't he? He's given it to him, isn't he? But listen, it works. It works. Verse 12, the people say, "We'll give it back." Okay, all right. You know, I don't know how Nehemiah looked. I don't know how Nehemiah spoke, but he obviously spoke effectively. He spoke with authority. "We'll give it back." The people says, "All right, we'll give it back. And we'll not demand anything more from them. We'll do as you say." And then Nehemiah says, I summoned the priests and made the nobles and the officials. There they are again. The priests were the religious heavies. They were the religious heavies. They were the one who solemnized oaths. I summoned the priests, made the nobles and the officials take an oath to do what they promised. And then I shook out the folds of my robe and I said, "In this way may God shake out of their house and possessions anyone who does not keep his promise. So may such a person be shaken and emptied." It was a bit of a prophetic kind of a demonstration. It's what the prophets did. Shake the dust off your feet. Shake the people out of your robes. And so he had the nobles and the officials take an oath that this is what they would do. And then Nehemiah, as if to say, if you don't, I'm going to shake you out of my robe. I'm going to shake you out of my robe. At this, the whole assembly said, "Amen." Well, maybe the best thing that they've said all day. Amen. and praised the Lord. And the people did as they had promised, at least for now. Now listen, what a passage, isn't it? What a passage. So much here. But mainly, I want to start by just pointing out what a huge contrast this is from the incredible sense of patriotic devotion and personal sacrifice for the sake of the wider community that they had as they've been building the walls in the last two chapters, to now this tragic revelation, really, of the what could only be said is the sacrifice of the wider community now for the sake of some individual's personal gain here in chapter 5. Listen, what a shock. It's a shocking revelation here. And I'm certain, as Nehemiah or whoever has penned this bit of the book, is really wanting us to just stop and think. You know, these times in the Bible, when things dramatically change, like, you know, Genesis 2 to Genesis 3, other points in time when there's just a dramatic change, I think that's a great time for us to selah, isn't it? It's a great time for us to selah. It's a great time for us to just stop and think and begin to maybe dig a little bit deeper, think, what's God saying to us here? Because a massive contrast going on here. Okay, three observations from the passage. Number one, the massive danger of festering sin. The massive danger of festering sin. Did you pick that up here as we read through this passage? Listen, there are no chapter breaks here. You understand that, right? There's no chapter breaks in the original manuscript here. It just reads as a manuscript. It just reads as a story. So there's you know, we have a chapter break that was, those were added later on by different people who were arranging the scriptures and arranging the letters. But there's no chapter break here, and so the sense then from chapters 3 and 4 that have been so encouraging and so amazing, the sense here is that there's no break in the action between chapters 3 and 4 and here in chapter 5. And if that's the case, then that means that right in the middle of this incredible building project that's going on in Jerusalem with loads of people and steadfast resistance to their enemies and great speeches and massive progress and almost total buy-in from the people, at the same time, seemingly at the very same time, there are people starving and debts accruing and children leaving as slaves so that their families can eat and survive. And if that's what's going on here, then listen, something is seriously rotten in Denmark, isn't it? Something is seriously rotten in Denmark, and here something is seriously rotten in Jerusalem. Right in the midst of all this great stuff that's been going on here, and all the camaraderie and all these people working together, and the high priest is working alongside the goldsmith and the perfumer and just people coming out of their homes and working on the wall in front of their houses, and the picture is just of an incredible unity and camaraderie together amongst all these people. Right in the midst of all of this, there's something that is really stinking under the surface, isn't there? That is the picture that we're being given. That is the story that's being told. There is just something really, really stinking, festering under the surface here. And we'll look in just a minute at what that specifically is. But for now, I just want to point out that it really is possible. Okay, these are God's people. They're part of God's plan. They're working according to God's purpose here, doing this. It was God that gave Nehemiah this great vision to come and do this. So these are God's people. And I think this passage points out to it that it really is possible for people like this, God's people, people in church, people who name the name of Yahweh, the name of Jesus, to look good on the outside, but to have something seriously rotten on the inside. Is that not right? Is that not right? And I think this is a Selah moment. I think this is, you know, in the Psalms where we're told to Selah, to pause, to ponder. This is a Selah moment, isn't it? It's a Selah moment for God's people. It really is. Just that it's possible for us to just look good, for things to look good in our lives, for us to look good, for somehow our families to look good or be presented as something. But in actual fact, there's something seriously, seriously wrong going under the surface, and that happens. That happens. This is real life. This is real life stuff. It's real life stuff. It happens. And listen, if you don't believe me that it's possible, then I hope you believe Jesus, who said to the Pharisees, Matthew 23, verse 27, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees." Okay, so these teachers of the law and Pharisees, these are the guys who taught other people what God was saying. So they're up there. Right, they're up there. These are the theological big shots or the ones who were perceived to be, and they were. If your righteousness doesn't exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you're not entering the kingdom of heaven, Jesus said. You know, so the picture is that these guys came across really well. They came across as being really righteous. That was their thing to do. They were God's people who looked as though they were righteous. And Jesus says, "Whoa." Woe, and woe is woe, you know, woe, stop, and consider this as well. Woe, Jesus says, teachers of the law and Pharisees, the guys who were supposed to know, you hypocrites, he says, you're like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. Woe! Well, that's a woe to the woe, right? Woe, man. In the same way, Jesus says, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside, you're full of hypocrisy and wickedness. Listen, I'd say this is possible. Wouldn't you? I'd say this is possible. It happens. It happens. And you know, I know this isn't happy. This is not good to hear, but this is reality. And the Lord is showing us it here for us to take note. Sit up and take note. Big contrast here. This happens. It happens with God's people. Listen, one of the most unnerving verses in all the Bible, I think, is Numbers 32:23. When this is when Israel are about to go into the promised land, and Moses is admonishing here the two and a half tribes of Israel who want to stay on the west side of the Jordan. They see the land there. They like the land there. They've conquered the kings there. It looks good. They want to stay on the west side of the Jordan, and Moses here is admonishing them to make sure they keep their promise to go in with all their brothers and fight in the promised land first, before they come back and settle down with their families and everything else on this side of the Jordan. And as he's admonishing them and reminding them of the promise that they've made, here's what he says. He says, "But if you fail to do this, you will be sinning against the Lord." And watch this now. Watch this. You'll be sinning against, it'll be something going on inside you. There'll be something that's rotten. There'll be something not nice, nasty, sin. "You'll be sinning against the Lord," he says, "and you may be sure that your sin will find you out." It's a very well-known verse. And you know, at first you look at that and you think, why is that a very well-known verse? I mean, that's chilling, right? It's a very well-known verse. That is a chilling verse. And maybe we'll come back to why it's well-known and why, in a sense, there's something just very good and real and living about what God says here. We'll come back to that just when we finish up here, okay? Because although this is hard, it's not all bad. Although this is hard to hear, it's not all bad, okay? We'll come back to that. This is a chilling verse, but this is what's happened here. Okay, and so here's my question. Here's my question. My question for all of us this morning as we selah, as we ponder, as we think. My question for all of us is there anything rotten in the Denmark of your life? Is there anything rotten in the Denmark of your life? Even as a God follower, is this possible? This happens. This happens in church. It happens here at Carruthers. Is there anything rotten in the Denmark of your life? Did you know that statistically, 3 out of every 4 Christian adults, 18 to 24 years old, who are watching this right now, are actively seeking out pornography? Those are the statistics. I'm not saying it's you, and I'm not saying it's 3/4 of Carruthers, but those are the statistics. Those are the statistics. Statistically, I'm not saying it's you, but it could be. It could be. And I know that's just, you know, I'm pulling one example out there, and that's kind of maybe beaten on the obvious transgression here. And I'm sorry about that. And I know there are loads of things that could be lurking below the surface. Aren't there? This is one, and this is a biggie, because it's very destructive, and it's very modern, and it's very now, and maybe it has been forever, but it certainly is now. But there are loads of things could be lurking below the surface. Unresolved relational conflict in our lives or our marriages. This happens. It's big. It's real. It's real. Control issues, gossip, backbiting. But we look good. You know, we look good. But something could be rotten in Denmark. And Paul's got a whole list of this stuff, if you're interested. A couple of times in his epistle, he's got a whole list of this stuff. So that's the selah. That's the selah. And I guess that's a bit of the warning, this massive danger of festering sin and what can happen. And you know, as a result of just letting this brew and letting it fester and pointing somewhere else or denying what we know is real. Okay, big danger. Now, I know this sounds really negative. Don't switch off yet, okay, because the story's not over, even though it does still get a little worse before it gets better, okay? Second point here is this specific, tragic sin of exploitation that's going on here in Nehemiah chapter 5, where we're told the nobles and the officials, it seems to be, most significantly and sadly, really, are totally taking advantage of their own people for personal gain. That's what's going on here. Okay, the Nehemiah seems to focus in on the nobles and the officials. Maybe because they had more of a responsible position. With that may have come certain wealth or you know, certain things that they had that other people didn't have, but that's where the focus is. And they are totally taking advantage of their own people for personal gain. And that's exactly what exploitation is, isn't it? That's exactly what exploitation is. When one person uses another person to profit in some way for themselves, in whatever way that's going to look, or whatever way that's going to happen. It might be financially, it might be sexually, it might be relationally, it might be vocationally. There are loads of ways that this happens. And sometimes it's just really, really subtle, isn't it? Sometimes exploitation is really, really subtle. Sometimes something just as simple as banter, wit, a battle of the wits between different people. I've seen it happen. I've done it myself. I've done it myself where I've thought that something that was just lighthearted banter, in actual fact, when I dug deep into my own heart, I was taking a step up by standing on somebody else. Just something as simple as banter, if we're not careful. When I'm getting one up on you, by taking a pot shot at something in your life. It happens all the time. I do it. I'm more guilty than anybody, because I like to joke around. But I was just thinking about that. It's just as I was going through this, I think, be really, really careful. Really careful. Because at the end of the day, if you're going up on the back of somebody else going down, then something is seriously wrong in your Denmark. Something is seriously wrong and rotten in your Denmark. And this is so tragic, isn't it? This is so tragic, especially here, because these are the guys who are supposed to be showing the nations how to live as a restored and divinely covenanted humanity. This is the nation. These are the people, aren't they? And I think Nehemiah knows this. He's one of them. He's one of them. And I think he knows this. And we'll see in a minute how this comes into his reasoning. But right now, let's just allow ourselves to be hit by the full force of this freight train of injustice. Because that's what it is. That's what it is. Charging interest that they're not supposed to charge their countrymen. Making them borrow money that they shouldn't have to borrow. And selling their kids as slaves. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding? Can you imagine how desperate someone must have to be? What the circumstances of a parent's life must have to be, what must be going on inside their heart and their head to reach a point where they feel that their only way out for survival is to sell their children into slavery. My goodness. My goodness. Listen, we so often think of justice. Listen, we so often think of justice simply as punishing the wicked, don't we? That's what we think of justice, the punishment of the wicked. And of course that's what justice is. Of course that's what justice is. But there is a whole other side to the justice coin, isn't there? There's a whole other side to the justice coin that has to do with simply treating other people like they've really been created in the image of God. Is that not right? Is that not justice? Is that not justice? That the creation of man and woman in the image and the likeness of God on page one of our Bibles is the bedrock of the entire Bible's view of justice. It is. It is. That every human being, because of who they are, intrinsically because of who they are, should be treated with dignity and fairness and equity, no matter who we are. No matter who we are. Now, I didn't set up doing Nehemiah 5 to coincide with what's going on all over the world right now with Black Lives Matter. I haven't set that up. This has just come. It's just happening. But I'm sure bells are ringing as we think about what's going on in the world just now. Listen, Micah 6:8 says that God has shown you, O man, what is good and what he requires of you to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. Listen, isn't that good? Isn't that good? Okay, well, time's getting on. Let me wrap this up now with something positive, okay? Let's get on to something positive here that I think, and I hope I'm not stretching it too much here, but I think really is certainly the total high point of these 13 verses. But I think you have to look really carefully in order to see it. Okay. My final point here is the power of the gospel to solve these problems. The power of the gospel to solve both the festering sin problem and the injustice problem. Is that not true? The power of the gospel to solve these things. And I'm wondering here, as I pull this out and try to show you this here, I'm wondering if going back to verse 6, and remember this little chat that Nehemiah had with himself back in verse 6. And I'm wondering if that little chat that he had with himself doesn't have something to do, or didn't have something to do, with just some good old-fashioned, old covenant gospel truth. You know what I mean? He had a chat with himself. He saw what was going on. We know that. We're not told what went on internally with Nehemiah. We just know that he had a chat with himself. But I'm wondering what he had a chat about. And as I see the way that he then approaches this and the turnaround that comes here in the people's lives, I'm just wondering whether this isn't what he had a chat with himself about, just some good old-fashioned, old covenant gospel truth. Because what Nehemiah does here, other than, of course, tear a strip off of these people, what he does here is he points them back to their identity. Did you see that? That's what he does. And in one sense, other than just yell at them, that's the essence of what he's saying. So if we're going to take this apart and say, Nehemiah, what are you really saying? That's what he's really saying. That's what he does. He points them back to their identity. And it does it in two places. He does it in verse 7 first, where he says, what does he say? Don't do this, he says. Don't charge these people interest because they're your own people. Identity. That's who you are. These people are your own people. You're charging your own people interest, he says. Don't you know who you are as the covenant people of God? And then in verse 9, he says this. He says, listen to this, really is powerful. Shouldn't you walk in the fear of our God to avoid the reproach of our Gentile enemies?